say hello. Good to see you again. Welcome to the next in the 67 steps, the guidelines, rules, principles of the world's smartest, most successful people. I've tried to do my best to bring them all together in some semblance of order and priority. And, you know, like I said, there's been a lot of good ideas throughout history. Billions of people have walked on this planet before you and I. And we're left in a place where if we're wise, if we're smart, if we want the good life, we can grab that those ideas and we can bring them into our own brain and we can learn faster, grow faster, and experience all the good stuff more easily. So today, I call this one Practical Pessimism, Paris Hilton's Grandfather, and Contemplating the Downside, the Fine Balance of Proper Perspective. So like in the world you live in now, you're gonna be continually bombarded really by two schools of thought on outlook. So the first school of thought is the default mode. It's when people aren't thinking, they're just naturally kind of negative. You've probably don't have to think very hard to think on people, you know, in your family, people who are, you know, friends, hopefully not married to somebody like this, but that's pretty common, boyfriend, girlfriend, coworkers, bosses, whose default outlook on life is always, woe is me, you know, nothing's gonna get better, I'm stuck. So that's the negative outlook. Now, there's been kind of a backlash in the last years. And I think throughout history of people going, no, don't be negative, don't be negative. You know, the power of positive thinking, right? I think that was Norman Vincent Peale, his famous book. There's been a tremendous amount of books put out. The Secret was this big movement. I forget the lady, that Australian lady who wrote a book and really started this movement, which has done some good. I'm not a hater. I think it's incomplete. And so what we're gonna talk about today is kind of not going to the extreme of just always being negative and not going to the extreme of this thinking that all you have to do is think positively, because the evidence shows that neither of those are true. So what is it? I call it, there's something that I think you and I should adopt. I've tried to adopt it, and this may be a new concept for you, or you may be already doing it. I call it practical pessimism, okay? Why do I call it that? Well, and that's not the only thing I call it, but I'll elaborate. So Paris Hilton's grandfather is a man named Conrad Hilton. I have his book here. If you haven't read it, it's down here. I'm not gonna, this stack, it's called The Hiltons, The True Story of an American Dynasty by J. Randy Taraborelli. So it's a great book. In there, in the very beginning, one of the first sections, it talks about this guy, Conrad Hilton, and who, by the way, I hear her actually on my street. Paris Hilton used to live on my street. She's moved now a couple blocks away. But her great-grandfather, the reason the world knows Paris Hilton is her great-grandfather was this guy, Conrad Hilton, who was growing, who grew up around the beginning, you know, turn of the century, early 1900s, went through the Depression and built the Hilton Hotel chain, which is still, you know, one of the preeminent hotel chains in the world. Maybe it's the number one Marriott Hilton. And so this book is the story of how he did it. And it's a great book to pick up, great biography. You know, I recommend reading biographies at night, put yourself to sleep, get some courage, learn at the same time, plus be entertained, all the good stuff. He says that there was a point in his life that he considers now, or he considered a turning point. He was walking by his mother's kitchen table, and she had a book by Helen Keller about optimism, and he picked up that book and he read it, and she basically, he was so struck by this concept of having faith, of having optimism, that at the end game, you're gonna be able to move towards your goals, right? End game is the operative word there. So he built these hotels, he was pretty young, you know. I mean, his dad moved back to California. They started boarding people in their house. He turned that. I hope I'm not blending stories. It's something like this story. There's another guy with a similar story, J.R. Simplot, another billionaire. I don't want to blend their stories. But he started relatively young in business, Conrad Hilton. Then he hit a point of expansion. This is before 1929, right? Before the big depression hit. And he went out there and he expanded his hotel chain throughout, I think it was in throughout Texas, multiple states. And then 1929 came. Bam. And I think something like 70 or 80% of all hotels in the United States closed down because there was no demand. People had no money. Read Grapes of Wrath or read these books if you forget what happened in the Depression, that other good book of Mice and Men. Or is it East of Eden? I forget the Steinbeck. The amazing books. I need to go back and restudy my Depression era history. It's not my forte. So anyway, but I know the general story of what happened. People got wiped out. And Conrad Hilton, the fascinating thing is he had all of these hotels that were thriving, but as Warren Buffett says, when the tide comes in, you see who's swimming naked. So he was expanding so fast, it was hard to have enough cash in the bank. And when that depression came and customers stopped showing up at his hotel, hotel after hotel after hotel disappeared. He had to close them down. He had to declare bankruptcy. He had to, you know, in effect, go from this person who was young and had this empire to losing it all. And he had one last hotel, and he didn't have enough money to pay the vendors. But the dairy farmer that used to deliver milk, Conrad Hilton said to him, he said, "Listen, I'm going to make this thing work. If you believe in me, if you give me this milk now, I will pay you back and I'll give you even more." And a handful of employees stuck around. They were loyal even when he couldn't pay them, and vendors and people that he was buying stuff from. And he was able to hold on to that one hotel through the Depression when almost everybody went downhill. And out of that, that was the seed for his whole hotel chain. And we all know how that story turned out very well. He became one of the wealthiest people in the world, his family, a dynasty. And so the takeaway there is not necessarily a business one, although you can apply it to business, but it's in every area of your life. He had optimism, but in the short term, he was not necessarily somebody who walked around and with their head in the sky. You know, you meet people that are totally into power of positive thinking, and they won't even talk about negative things. Oh, no, don't even bring them up because that is going to make them happen. Well, that's superstition. There's no truth to that, as far as I can tell. I like that Brad Pitt, anytime he finds a superstition, he purposely does the opposite. So if, you know, black cat is bad luck, he purposely goes and walks by black cats, or he walks under ladders. I don't know if that's a good idea, but I thought that was an interesting way to approach superstitions, and there's a lot of superstitions around this concept of optimism versus pessimism. And so Conrad Hilton had, as you read the book and you see his outlook, he had endgame optimism, that in the end, if he did his best and he stuck through it, and he was innovative, like he was innovative with the dairy farmer, instead of just saying, "Oh, I can't pay you," right? He was persuasive. For those of you who are in my, you know, the business academy and are in the persuasion and closing more customers and sales, I talk about that. The ability to persuade in Conrad Hilton's life was the, let me grab the book just to show you. That was the make or break moment, right? You wouldn't even know Conrad Hilton had that hotel, or, you know, most likely if that hotel had gone downhill. Here's the book, the Hiltons. Got a picture with him, and he married Zsa Zsa Gabor. I think she was the most beautiful woman in the world, they said at that time. And there's him and Paris Hilton. Now, lost my books. The takeaway for you is that there's a certain necessity for faith. Faith that yeah, like Michael Jordan, I'm reading that book about his comeback. If you're on my book of the day, you'll remember I wrote something recently where it just said, look, Jordan, no matter what the game was doing, had this tremendous faith that if he keeps shooting the ball, no matter how many times he was missing, that it would hit. You know, Kobe Bryant, I know you may or may not like basketball, but you know you're trying to shoot the ball in the hoop. And Kobe Bryant was talking about a player. He was watching a game one time, another player, Deron Williams, who missed 9 shots in a row and then stopped shooting. And Kobe Bryant commented to somebody in the stands, he said, I would never have a 0 for 9 game. I would never miss 9 shots and never shoot again. And the person said, why? He said, well, I'm either going to make a lot of points or shoot 0 for 30. Like, I'm going to shoot 30 times in a row and miss. When I look at my statistics, I want that number. I want never want 0 for 9 because that means I gave up after 9 shots. Kobe Bryant, another person on this planet, like Conrad Hilton, like Michael Jordan, like all people who have impact. And you must rise above the crowd, as Nietzsche says, rising above. And to rise above the crowd, you have to have more faith, quote, slash optimism, than the average person. You have to see the future when no one else does. Now, you can't be delusional about it. And many people, I live in Hollywood, this is the land of delusion. People with no talent, I call this American Idol factor. You see American Idol, people get up there, can't sing at all. Their mom told them they could sing. There's no, you know, they should have gone through the 67 steps. Read the feedback. No feedback from strangers or even, as Nietzsche says, from enemies. People who don't know you, people don't like you. No one's saying they can sing, but they think they're going to get up on the show American Idol and the judges in America and the world's going to love them, and it doesn't work out that way because they're delusional. But those same people could have faith that if they can identify their destiny and then have what we're going to talk about next, which is practical pessimism. So what practical pessimism is, it's the tool that gets you to the optimistic goal. So you're here, let's say. You're here today, okay? And let me do this a little bit. Okay, you're here, and you want to get to here. So this is your optimistic goal. And what's going to get you there? It's not optimism. See, that's the catch-22. That's the irony. That's what most people can't get their mind around. They're like, no, Ty, I read this book. But you'll see how obvious that this is. So as you move towards your goal, okay, you do it with a different tool. You move towards optimism with pessimism. Remember that. Write that down. You move towards optimistic goals with pessimism. Now, I don't mean negativity. Don't confuse us. What pessimism says, it's a little bit like Charlie Munger, the billionaire, says. He says, I've spent my whole life preparing for the worst every day, and I'm happier for it. See, the misconception, the myth that you're going to hear is that, no, don't even say negative things. You might bring them into fruition or something, some superstition like that. No. If you want to not have bad things happen to you, when you get in your car and you don't want to die in a car accident, well, you go, seatbelts keep me from a horrible outcome that might happen today. I might get hit by a drunk driver. I'm thinking about the pessimistic outcome of getting hit by a drunk driver. And for that reason, I snap my buckle out of fear. Not paralyzing fear, not fear that's detrimental, but motivating fear. And you must have that in anybody, whoever tries to foist upon you the lie and the myth that fear is not functional, is, for lack, I'll say it nicely, is unenlightened. I don't mean unenlightened in the spiritual sense. I'm just saying they don't know what they're talking about. Everything in your brain, every emotional mode you can go into, fear, happiness, surprise, mischief, joy, depression, each of them are tools that when used properly, when you use the screwdriver for the screw or the hammer for the nail, when they're used at the right time in the right place for the right length of time, the right intensity, you will get what you want. They are functional. They function for your benefit. So in this case, you get in the car, or you're Conrad Hilton. He's sitting one night going, I don't have enough money. I'm not going to be able to pay the farmer who brings milk that I use at the breakfast at my hotel. So he's thinking negative. I'm going to not have milk, he's thinking. But he has the optimistic end game goal here. So he's here, and he's not yet there where he can pay for it. The optimistic goal is where you're at such wealth with your hotel chain, Hilton Hotel chain, that you just buy milk and, you know, you can pay cash and there's no issue. But at that moment, when the negative times were there, he used the negative to spur on innovation, and he said, I'm going to be persuasive tomorrow. Tomorrow when they come in, I'm going to offer them something that I don't have now. I'm going to ask them to be optimistic and say, one day I will pay you back. And by the way, Conrad Hilton found those people. Many of those people who believed in him invested in him when the times were tough, when it was a dark depression economic circumstance. He went out, tracked them down, gave them shares and stock in his company. And those people that believed in him made 10, 20 times their money back for whatever they had lent to him or given him in his time of need. So that all hinged upon, he probably thought about it ahead of time. He probably wasn't just going off the cuff. His pessimism the night before had allowed him to plan for an optimistic future. It's that simple. Pessimism will be your tool. You must contemplate the downside. So the third thing, so we've talked about three things here. End game, you want to be optimistic. You want to see the future when no one else can, like Helen Keller. Born about 18, 19 months into it, she developed a fever. That fever took away her senses, her sense of hearing, and her sense of, you know, she couldn't see. She was blind. And she went through a time where she was just angry and wild child, and no one could control her. But what happened was she had practical pessimism and optimism at the same time. So Helen Keller optimistically said, no, I'm going to figure out a way that I can communicate with the world. It's all dark now. I can't see. I can't hear. Imagine that. Not being able to hear or see. You're completely cut off. But she had her own mind. She had the ability. And she wrote a book. I think it's called Essays on Optimism. I don't know. I have a couple books by Helen Keller. You can look up one. Martin Seligman, the great social scientist, talked also about a book. I wrote a book called Learned Optimism. So Helen Keller had this ability to just go, it's dark, literally it was dark, it was quiet, I'm all alone, but the end game, I'm gonna figure out how to connect with humanity, and she did do it. And the pessimism that said, no, I can't use my eyes anymore, she practical. She didn't try to go, no, I'm just gonna magically, my eyes are gonna get better through the power of positive thinking. I mean, if you could pull off miracles like that on a consistent basis, that would be great. I'm not sure anyone's, even if you believe in miracles, no one's been able to figure out how to make them at command. Even if you believe in a religion, people can be healed that are sick or this. You do know, and you would agree, that sometimes people who are sick die. And so the practical pessimism that she had was said, no, be practical, Helen. You have lost your eyesight. You have lost your hearing. And that spurred her forward into innovation, and she, you know, worked with Braille and developed a whole series and helped a whole series of ideas and innovations so that handicapped people around the world could benefit, and she connected with the world, and she used touch, which was interesting. I was reading a book of hers very recently, and for her, she replaced innovatively her hearing with touch. So she used another sense. Now, the next point to write down is what I call contemplating the downside. So whenever you're presented with ideas, you're presented with, you know, you want to launch a business, you want to think, and I've talked about this before, so I'm not going to go completely, go back and re-listen to, it's called something about the fighter pilot mentality, where I talked about the three, let me see what it's called, yeah, belt suspenders, failing to fail, and how not to crash your F-22. So I'm not going to go into that except to say you can make multiple plans. You can plan for the worst, like Lao Tzu said. Do what's difficult when it's easy. like Coach Wooden said, prepare for the rainy day. So I want you to start contemplating the downside now. So contemplate today. What if your business you work for, the business you own, had some catastrophe? You lost all of your employees. You lost your job. You lost all of your customers. Massive economic depression came. I want you to, but you know your end game. We've already talked about that much earlier in the 67 steps. You already have defined a cool end game. Those recessions, that loss of your company, that betrayal, that's not going to derail you from getting to your end game goal. But now you're going to need this practical pessimism. So what do you do? What other job would you go out? Maybe start cultivating relationships so that if you lose one business or one job, you have other options. Maybe cultivate more skill, read some more books, go to some more workshops, apprentice or mentor under people, intern, like learn more, teach yourself, listen to YouTube videos, become self-taught. What is it that you're going to do to get to that real place of, that real place where you've contemplated the downside before it hit you between the eyes? That means you're going to need to save some money. That means you're going to need to double down and educate and invest some money in your own education, learning, knowledge. It means you're going to have to know that you are aging. The end game goal is that you go to your grave one day as a healthy person. You die in your sleep. You don't die. Not that this is completely in your own, you know, the best laid plans of men are still subject to fate, I believe. That's my personal opinion. So, but you can still do your best. So you're going to have to double down on your body. You're going to have to put some muscle on. You might say, well, I'm too old or I'm too young. Well, that might be true, and you got to do a little bit different than if you're in the prime of your life, but now's the youngest you'll ever be. So you might as well start now. Lose a little weight. Take another class. Go running. Go hiking. Things you've been putting off. Learn a language. Because there will be days when you're on your path to the optimistic goal where huge obstacles get thrown in front of you. And if you do not have the ability to simulate those ahead of time through practical pessimism, you will be unprepared. And what is it? Fortune favors the brave. But bravery is important, but to not be foolhardy, you have to be prepared. That's, you know, Boy Scouts thing. I think it was, who was it that talked about it? It slipped my mind right now, but a cool little insight on preparation. Oh, Laura Paul and Ingalls Wilder, if you've ever read Little House on the Prairie, you know, had that ability to really, to make his own luck, he said, you know. He was prepared. That's what creates luck. That's what creates fate. That's what creates fortune. So for you, I hope you're not going to be on either extreme. You have thesis. You have antithesis. I don't want you to be either. I want you to find this nice blend, this nice place to be where you go, you know what? I'm not going to be like the masses that are always negative. I'm not going to be like people who read a few books and just go, oh, positive. That's it. Just positive. Just only speak positive. Only like this magic. Like there's some magic formula. There is no magic formula. There's practicality. There's a few little tricks of the trade. There's a few ways to expedite your success. You're going through one of them now. But ultimately, you must find your own balance. Yours won't be exactly the same as mine. Maybe you'll be a little more optimistic by nature, by constitution, as Sigmund Freud talks about, our natural constitution. You can do your Myers-Briggs, as you know, some of the great thinkers have talked about these types of personalities that we have, Carl Jung with the Myers-Briggs. So you may be a little more naturally an optimist, a little more naturally pessimistic. That's okay. You can find your niche, as Richard Dawkins talks about. There's niches, or Dr. David Buss, there's niches that we fill in a society. You can fill a niche of a little more optimist, but you still have to find your own personal blend that has both. To have good soup in life, the good bowl of soup, a chicken noodle soup, you need a little bit in proper ratio and proper proportion. So I like to try to, you know, have a lot of optimism in the long run. That I'll eventually figure out. But I like to be pessimistic and go, no, I will not get to my optimistic goal unless I expect the unexpected, unless I prepare for the things that everybody else is just pretending. You know, the average person is pretending like they'll never have a disaster financially, and that's why I don't save any money. I'll be fine. Well, you don't be that. You go practically, no. By the time you're in your mid-40s, you have a something like 40% chance you'll be disabled temporarily, some car crash, injury. So if you haven't prepared for that financially, you're going against the odds. You're going against Mother Nature. And like I said on this one talk I did in London, Mother Nature laughs last, Joel Salatin saying. Don't make Mother Nature your enemy. Make her your ally. So the three questions I have for you now to close this up. The first one is, which imbalance level, you know, side have you been on? Have you been too optimistic or too pessimistic? Okay. Question number two, what's the root of that imbalance? Did you read a book? Did you grow up around people that were either super optimistic or super negative? What's that? What's the root of it? And number three, okay, what you're going to do differently. What are you going to do differently? Maybe it's add a little more optimism. Maybe it. And four, this last one, very important. Practical. What's your optimistic end goal that you're going towards? But what's some practical pessimistic outcomes you're going to head off before they hit you, right? So maybe your end game goal is to have a great family and financially independent. So what's the downside? What's going to derail you from these goals? Okay, that's the downside. What actions are you taking? You got to contemplate the downside. What could go wrong? So what could go wrong with the way I eat and exercise? What could go wrong with my job? What could go wrong with my love life, my family life, my friendships? What could go wrong with my happiness and my intangibles? And then think it through before it happens. Contemplate that downside, because that way you'll be able to be like Kobe Bryant or Conrad Hilton or Michael Jordan, or read the book Contiki on the book list. People that had faith and they finally pulled it off because they were prepared. They had understood the proper balance of optimism with practical pessimism, just like Helen Keller. So thank you so much. Go ahead and fill those out here. Reply back to some other people's comments. Get involved in the community. The community is a big part of what you're going to get. Believe it or not, it seems weird, but it seems counterintuitive. But by interacting, that's why I like these comments to be, they're not public for everybody. The only people who can see them are other people going through the program. So they'll understand you. You don't have to, you know, share with everybody. It's a small community, you know, it's a tight community. Then write that in your private journal you should be keeping. And this is, you know, the one on practical pessimism, Paris Hilton's great grandfather. So thanks so much. You can email those to me if you want me to review them, tylopez.com. And I will talk with you, should be tomorrow. Okay. Thanks so much.